Okay, we'll call to order the Cultural Service Historic Reservation and Tree Advisory Board. Start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I do the roll call?
Ms. LaBarre? Ms. Keese?
Here.
Mr. Schaefer?
Here.
Ms. Finch? Ms. Bell?
Here.
We have a quorum with three members present.
Thank you. Okay, we have oath of office.
So, Ms. Bell, I will administer the oath of office to you. If you wouldn't mind standing and raising your right hand. If you agree to everything, then you'll just say, "I will," at the end. I, Diane Bell, a citizen of the United States of America and resident of the town of Ponce-Inlet, being appointed to the Cultural Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board of the town of Ponce-Inlet, Florida, do hereby solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Florida, and the charter and ordinances of the town of Ponce-Inlet, that I am duly qualified to serve under the Constitution of the State of Florida and the Charter of the Town of Ponce-Inlet, and that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of the board on which I am about to enter, so help me God.
I will.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, election of chair. Okay, I elect Ms. Finch. I know she's not here, but
I second it.
That's what happens when you.
I think so.
All in favor.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All
Any
opposed?
Opposed?
Ayes have it. Okay, now we need the vice chair. Geez, would you be interested in being vice chair?
I'll do vice chair.
Okay. I nominate her for vice chair.
Okay. I second it.
Okay, we have a second.
The first official act.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it. All opposed, ayes have it.
So then that means then that Keys runs this meeting.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
The adoption of agenda.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
So with Ms. Keese formally accepting the vice chair position,
I get it.
We'll have you run the rest of this meeting, but we're here for assistance.
Okay, it's been a while. Okay, so we have to move, adopt the agenda. Do I have a motion?
I move we adopt the agenda as written.
And I second it.
Motion approved. No, all in favor?
All in favor, say aye.
All in favor, aye.
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 Motion approved. All right. Okay, and does anybody need time to look over the minutes? Any corrections or additions? No?
No.
Okay. Anybody want to make a motion to approve the minutes from December 2nd?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of December 2nd, 2024.
And I will second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion is passed. And now the report of staff. Cultural Services update, Jackie Alex.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year. Welcome officially, Ms. Bell, as the newest board member. We're excited to have you join us. And thank you for volunteering for a better part and different part of your community. Staff are always available should you or anybody else of the board have any questions, as well as my door is always open and my phone as well if anybody has any questions. The 2024 events and programs report, we did provide 26 programs last year, including some special programs, and a total of 1,300 attendees throughout all those in 2024. Volunteers are, of course, the heart of our ecosystem, so thank you all to those that helped, because we could not serve this community without it. And then lastly, in front of you all are the Save the Dates for the spring programs. That's February through May. All our volunteer opportunities. Please follow our Facebook to stay up to date with any changes, and we hope to see you all at one of those next year. And I'm available if you have any questions.
Okay, and now we'll hear from Public Works, Stephen Wargo.
Good afternoon. So far, we've had a lot of stuff come up at the museum. So the museum has a new coat of paint, actually two coats, three, if you count the primer. I had them do a bonding primer and two finish coats. So now the museum is all painted. And it was actually by a local contractor who has lived in the town of Ponce Inlet for six generations. He did the inside of the bathrooms at the museum for free. Nice. So we got a good job there. We have a fence contractor picked, and they are going to do the fence, new fence at the museum. I'm just waiting for them to get their stuff together and move on getting it done. I have some quotes now to do the boardwalk at the museum, and so they're gonna pull all of the deck boards off and all the tops of the rails off, and they're gonna put all brand new in there.
Great.
And so we'll have that done. And then Ponce Preserve Boardwalk, they are up to the second gazebo. And actually now they're going to move out to the last gazebo and start working more forward. I have not allowed the boardwalk to be open, even though they have sections finished, because it's still an active construction site. So hopefully they should be done by the end of January.
Great.
Other than that, I have engineering and specifications done for the Timaquan Park boardwalk and the boat ramp. And so I will be putting that out to bid, or we will be putting that out to bid here shortly, so that we can move forward in getting those fixed and working properly. One project that has come up, we got reports from citizens about the tower at Ponce Preserve. There was some graffiti on the tower. Also, in doing an inspection on it, somebody's taken, probably youngsters, and carved stuff into the wood and stuff. So I'm getting a proposal from a contractor to sand it down, seal it, and then put a hard clear coat on it all, so that it will help protect it, especially from, at least from the graffiti stuff, because that hard coat will protect it and we'll be able to clean it off a lot easier. And with the money saved in doing the boardwalk and the painting and the fence, I'll be able to get that done this year without having to put in for more money next year.
Great.
Okay. I have a question. Could you check the doors at Ponce Preserve at the bathrooms? I know they had repaired those once before. They're steel doors, and what happens, they rust. I don't know if it would be feasible to put something like fiberglass doors on there. Maybe you could check into that.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of times you have problems with exterior doors, especially when they're made out of metal.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, because actually I have been looking into that. Because something I did in the past is for parks is go to go to a powder coat steel door, and because the powder coat will last usually 15 to 20 years, right, even in this weather.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, old business, I guess there's no old business. So new business is the wonderful annual board member training.
And that is so exciting for me. The words cannot describe the level of excitement felt here in little Gotha in the middle of Orlando. Listen, first of all, I want to apologize. It is entirely on me for not being at your meeting. I assumed, which was a wrong thing to do, that someone else in my office was covering it. Fortunately, those folks are generally more diligent than I am about following up. And so at about 5:10 today, I got a call. Well, are you going to Cultural Services Board? I said, I never go, which is pretty accurate. He says, well, you're supposed to go this time. And so here I am. So I apologize. I would otherwise be there in person because there's nothing more fun than driving through 5 o'clock traffic to get to Ponce Inlet. I'm going to start with a special request that was made that has nothing to do with sunshine, but everything to do with y'all not getting in trouble while you're doing your jobs. And that is specifically regarding conflicts of interest when it comes to voting. Before I go further, I want to make sure, I'm assuming you guys are hearing me okay, but is that true?
Yes.
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 Okay. If you ever have a problem, you know, raise your hand and I'll slow down. I'll go back and repeat. I should have a pretty good connection here and we should have no problems, but just in case. All right. So there's a conflicts form called Form 8B. And it is a form that must be prepared and filed by any one of you if you have a conflict in voting. The difficulty is trying to determine when such a conflict exists. And I'm going to tell you that a simple answer to the question is, and then I'm going to tell you what the more complicated answer is in case you have to do your own analysis. The first thing I'll tell you, the simple thing is, if you have any doubt about whether you have a conflict, either pick up the phone to call me or call the Florida Commission on Ethics hotline. And they will tell you, based on your description of the facts, whether or not you can or can't not vote on the item that is coming in front of you. Now, please note, you cannot unvote. I've actually had this come up where someone voted and then thought about a possible conflict after the fact, and after paying a $5,000 fine, learned that that does not work. You cannot unvote. So even if they do the vote over again and you don't participate, you've still engaged in an ethical problem, and you will be pursued for that if someone files a complaint. The story that I like to tell about this, because it sort of makes the point better than I could, I attended a council meeting for one of my longtime cities, the city of Maitland. And in that meeting, an architect who was on our council had just come from a ribbon cutting for a building on which he was the architect. That night, literally by coincidence, the same person for whom he was the architect on that building was before council on an appeal of a zoning matter involving his lakefront home. And the architect, without giving it a second thought, voted in favor of the variance appeal for this particular homeowner, who was also the person who had hired him to be the architect on his office building. That is called voting on a matter for a principal by whom you've been engaged, which is a fancy way of saying you voted on something where you were working for the person and benefited the person you were working for, and you can't do that. Only after the vote was made did he determine that that might have been a problem. The council immediately did the vote over again without his participation, which you would think would solve the problem, but it doesn't. It's one of those things that you cannot put the genie in the box. You can cure the vote, but you can't cure the violation. Having everybody else slow down and not speed doesn't mean that you didn't speed. So does everybody kind of understand that concept?
Yes.
All right. I see some nodding heads, so I'm going to go with that. All right. So what is the most important thing to understand about conflicts so that you can tell yourself or have a good idea of whether you might have a conflict? Well, the first is, does it, meaning the vote, inure to your private gain or loss, financially speaking? Now, that last part, financially speaking, was an addition to the statute several years back. Before, it was simply private gain or loss. But since then, we've gotten clarification through the courts and through the Ethics Commission that we're talking about financial gain. So ethereal gains like it'll make me feel better, I'll have a better attitude, I'll smile more often, and so forth, those are not the kinds of gains or losses. It would make me sad. Those are not the kinds of things that the commission cares about, nor does the law care about. But what does it mean when it says gains or losses? Well, I have a hard time coming up with an example that might apply in cultural services. And so maybe given what you do on a regular basis, you might have some better ideas of where this may apply. But the gains part is easy enough, right? If you're somehow going to financially benefit from a decision, then you probably have a problem. And at a minimum, you need to check with the Ethics Commission. A good example of one where I know you could be a beneficiary is if anyone on the board, including those members that are not there today, are realtors and the town wants a piece of property for a cultural services kind of project and you might make a commission, then, you know, I think was it Jeff Foxworthy says you might be a redneck, you might have a problem. And so that's those are the easier ones. But what does it mean when it says gain or loss? Well, similarly, if the vote that you're going to make, suppose you're going to vote against something, and the reason is because you think that this thing, whatever this is, might end up hurting you financially. It's going to be put closer to your house than you wanted, and you think it's going to hurt your property values or something of that nature. It's going to hurt your some aspect that will financially hurt you. That's a loss part. So it's not necessarily that it has to benefit you in order to be a conflict. If it could potentially hurt you and you wanted to vote for that reason, you would probably have a conflict. So that's what it means when it says special private gain or loss. The private part is you. The gain or loss I've explained. And let me give a further expansion of the private part. It has to be a gain or loss that is unlike the rest of the public around you and by a certain percentage. And that sounds weird, but let me explain. The commission has come up with something called the 10% rule as a way to figure this out. So if you're in a homeowners association of 99 homes and you are but one of 99, and this thing might affect the values in your neighborhood, your potential problem is not above the 10% threshold, whether it's a benefit or a loss. And they will tell you, but you should ask that you do not meet the 10% threshold for you to have to declare a conflict. Or excuse me. Yeah, that's the situation. If you are at 1,000 homes, excuse me, I think I had that backwards. Let me go back. If you are at 1,000 homes, you're definitely not at the percentage where you need to have a conflict because there are so many homes similarly affected that it's not going to be your situation. But if you are one of 10 homes, then you are in the 10% threshold and you have a different analysis and the Ethics Commission will tell you you're at the 10% threshold. You need to declare conflict and not vote. Now, again, I told you there would be the complicated explanation, which I've just been through, and the easy explanation. The easy explanation, if you have any doubt in your mind, ask before you vote, because you cannot fix it after you vote. If someone makes a complaint, you may have a problem. Any further questions about that?
Yeah, I have a question as far as, must you fill out the form or can you just abstain from voting?
No, you absolutely have to fill out the form, and let me talk about timing. So, in most cases, the form will be filled out by just the way things come up, either immediately after the meeting, but no less than, I think it's 14 days after the meeting. And on the record, at the time of the meeting in which the conflict is declared, you're supposed to do the following. A, announce that you believe you may have a conflict or that you have a conflict and that you will be abstaining from the vote. Here's the conflict that you think is involved. The decision involves a direct family member. The decision inures to your financial gain or loss or whatever the reason might be. And you will then fill out the form directly after the meeting, provide it to the clerk, and then that'll be put on the records in the town and also sent to Tallahassee, and it'll be on file there. Now, the timing of this is critically important because the 15th day won't work. If it's 14, and that's my recollections, it's 14 days, you have to do it before then. And the smartest time to do it is right after you voted, in anticipation of what's going to come up, and so you don't forget it. There's no reason you can't file the form in advance of the vote, but at a minimum, try to do it no later than the night of whatever the vote is that you abstain from. I've had this come up recently in a city during budget season, and of course you guys don't vote on budget per se, but what happened there is I was not asked to attend that meeting. The commissioner declared that because I wasn't present, he was going to abstain from voting and declare a conflict. Which I have news for you, my presence doesn't make something a conflict or not. It is what the facts are that make it a conflict. And I understand that he is now under investigation for his abstention, as well as his failure to provide an adequate explanation for why he abstained. Don't know what's going to happen. Obviously wish it hadn't happened, but that's the way that goes. And so you should know that the form is an important part of compliance. Timeliness is an equally important part. And the last thing I need to tell you about this particular issue is that if you are in doubt, but you don't realize it till the last minute, say you're sitting there and you didn't even know this was on the agenda, and all of a sudden it occurs to you, I may have a problem. There is a specific portion of the statute that says if you believe you have a conflict, then you may abstain. But again, you have to fill out the form explaining your reasons and your rationale. You have to not participate in the vote, and you should explain in public at the time why you're abstaining, not just that you're going to abstain because of a conflict. And this is important because, and this is something that everybody on the board needs to understand, there is another statute or another part of the same statute that says if you do not have a declared conflict, you must vote. You cannot abstain because it's somebody you like or you don't like or you just don't think you understand it well enough. Those are not reasons to abstain. All right, anything further on the conflicts issue?
No, I think that I don't have any.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Say we're at a meeting, we didn't have all this, and you realize you need the form. Does the town have a lot of these? Okay, so you would just ask for one. Okay.
Yes, correct. Okay. Yes, the form would be available to you. It's also downloadable off the website. I think it's called Form 8B. Yes. And yeah, the town should have a ready supply of those. No problem. We'll be able to get them in a matter of seconds. It's not a problem.
Okay, thanks.
So now I'm going to do the Sunshine Law part of this, which will touch on public records a little bit, but mostly deals with sunshine. Of the three of you that are present, have any of you not had sunshine training before? I don't see anybody raising their hand. So I'm going to assume that you have familiarity with the topic. I will give you a refresher. I do not know if there is an in Chambers PowerPoint for you to look at. I do have one that we presented before, but it's pretty much unnecessary if you already have a good idea about what sunshine's about. So my job from here on out is just to remind you that, yes, this is serious business and should not be taken lightly. All right, so what is the Sunshine Law? In simple terms, it is the law that requires that public bodies meet in public. If you have any doubt, Cultural Services Advisory Board is a public body. The fact that you were unelected and an appointed position instead makes no difference. The fact of the matter is your decisions as recommendations influence the decision-making of the council. And as a result of decision-making influencing the decisions of council and perhaps planning board in certain circumstances and other boards in the town means that you are a part of how the sausage gets made. And Sunshine Law is all about the public being able to see how the sausage gets made. And that is why it is prohibited for any one of you to talk to any of the rest of you on this board about board business that it either is coming before you or is likely in the future to come before you or has in the past come before you and may come back again. Because if you were to talk about those things outside of a public meeting, you would be denying the public the opportunity to see how the sausage gets made, i.e. how decisions are made. So how do we do that without being unneighborly to one another? Well, that's it may seem like a funny question, but it's a common one because it's a small town. And even in large cities, you will run into each other in social events. You might celebrate a birthday at a restaurant. Who knows? All kinds of things happen, Christmas parties and such as that. You must remember that you are never off the clock when it comes to the board participation that you're engaged in. So whether you're at a social event, whether you're at a dinner, whether you're at anything else, some other club that has nothing to do with the town, you know, sailing, fishing, whatever it might be, the rules still apply to you. And they will always apply to you. And what you need to understand is if you were found to be violating Sunshine in a place that the law would deem to be an attempt of secreting your conversations away because you're privately meeting, whether it's be at a party, a dinner, or whatever, and you were reported for such, they will deem that an intentional violation if they can prove it. And that's the difference between a civil infraction and a criminal case that could send you, literally send you to jail. So this is a very important part of the conversation that I always like to reinforce, not to scare anybody, but so people understand that folks can be and are regularly prosecuted in this state for violating the Sunshine Law. There are many things I could tell you about how it's violated and people who have been to jail. And usually I can show you clips, including recent clips on the news of places around the state of Florida where people have been criminally prosecuted or civilly fined or both for Sunshine violations. It's a common thing. And the fact that it hasn't happened to you is kind of like saying, well, I haven't had an accident in the last 20 years and you may go out tomorrow and have an accident. So don't assume that because it hasn't happened to you that it will not happen to you, because all it takes is one citizen to be mad at you about something and you can become a target, particularly today in today's charged political atmosphere. Now, how do you avoid that? Well, first, you do not email one another. You do not reply all to an email that is not to a board member on your same board when other board members may be copied. The key word there is may be copied. If you don't recognize all the email addresses on one of those chain emails, and one of them may be one of your peers, you should refrain from replying all so that that person may be a part of that communication. Now, note here, I did not say if it's about board business. And why did I not include that caveat or that sort of additional fact? It is because the mere fact of communication is all it takes to make a complaint. It doesn't mean you're going to be guilty, but as I have said many, many times, being investigated is not a bargain. It's still uncomfortable. It is unpleasant. It results in sleepless nights. And you're talking to someone who could never legally be charged with violating the law, but yet has been investigated himself twice. I've never been elected to anything. I couldn't even run for school president and get elected, much less a class representative. I'm just not that popular. But when a state attorney doesn't understand the law, which is frequently, they will investigate you anyway. So this is why I'm overly cautious here. Just avoid communication with one another outside of these meetings and you'll be fine. Communication includes all the regular suspects: email, text, phone, voicemail, notes on the table, you name it. If it's a form of semaphores, if you're sending out flares, if you do sign language, whatever it is, don't do it. Now, you may then ask, well, that's not practical. It's a small town. I'm going to run into people. I'm not going to be unnice. What am I supposed to do? Okay, well, I understand that. I get it. It's not like I'm not sympathetic to it. I'm just trying to keep you out of trouble. So here's what I'm going to tell you. As a defensible matter, if you are only worried about what you can defend, it is the substance of the communication that determines whether there's a violation or not. So it's only if you actually talk about business that is coming before you, has come before you, or may come before you in the future that will get you in trouble. But as simple as that sounds, the very first time I was investigated, I'd only been a city attorney for probably 6 or 7 months and was in a meeting where the council was having a dinner and nothing was discussed about council business. But a former mayor of the town saw us sitting there eating and reported us all. And it took 4 months of investigation to determine that we didn't talk about anything that was on the agenda. And that was only after everybody that they interviewed said, yeah, none of it was about anything that was on the agenda or even could reasonably be on the agenda. We were talking about kids' soccer games and Florida Gator football, and which was a lot better in those days than it is today, and things of that nature. So that's the reality. It's what you talk about that makes the violation. But the idea that someone sees you doing what they think is a violation is what gets you reported. And that's an important distinction. And that's why I hammer on it. Now, as a body, what you should know about the severity of the Sunshine Law, not the sanctions against you, but against the town as a whole, are like this. Any decision that you make or that contributes to a decision that the town ultimately makes in violation of the Sunshine is, these are Latin words and the only ones I'm going to use today, void ab initio, as if it did not happen. So you have to go all the way back to the beginning and start over. When is that kind of an important thing to understand? Well, in Volusia County, and I've used this example multiple times, there was a hospital called the Bert Fish Hospital. Some of you might have heard of it. It is now a part of the Advent system, I believe. But before it became part of the Advent system, it was proposed to be merged and ultimately did merge after a series of, and when I say a series, over a year of closed door meetings, which were then challenged by the Bert Fish Foundation as illegal violations of the Sunshine. But they were following the advice of their stupid lawyer who didn't understand Sunshine. And I won't name the firm, although I sometimes love to do it, but it is one of the biggest firms in Central Florida that's got a reputation for being brilliant. And trust me, they're not, as the story I'm about to tell you would make clear. And so after completing the merger, 13 months of private meetings, a lawsuit being filed, the court very quickly found upon review that the merger was invalid because all of the meetings that went into determining whether the merger should go forward were held in violation of the Sunshine, therefore void ab initio, and they had to undo the entire merger at the tune of many, many, many millions of dollars. And they started all over again. And that law firm paid a huge malpractice judgment, or settlement, excuse me, not judgment. So that's the way it works. So you might think, well, this is a small enough decision, it'll be fixed somewhere else. But the reality is you're part of the decision-making tree. And if your decisions are tainted and they play a role, which they always do, and the decisions are made upline from you, it will be a problem for the town. And that has nothing to do with the criminal penalties that would follow and face you all, not to mention potential civil lawsuits against you by the injured parties. Example, in the hospital case, the actual Adventist who thought everything was cool and spent a bunch of money to try to do the merger in the first instance. So this is a big deal. And a lot of people think it gets overstated, particularly by me. They call me a fear monger, but that's not the goal here. The goal is to keep you out of trouble and make you understand. And it's one of the reasons why I think Jackie said in the opening, when she swore in the new board member, that it's very important to the town to have volunteers. But it's also as important that the volunteers understand this is a serious job. And however frivolous it may seem from time to time to you all, it's the failure to take it seriously that gets you in trouble. And nobody wants to see that. So how do we again stay out of trouble? Avoid communication with each other outside of these proceedings about anything of consequence regard of board service. If you are encountering one of your board members outside of this arena, please, for your own benefit, make sure there are witnesses to the conversation that can swear under oath that you did not discuss board business at all. Something that often gets missed here is that people think that emails that are sent to you privately about your board business are private. This is touching now on both public records and Sunshine. That is not true. So if a particular citizen is hot about an issue and writes to any one of you about his displeasure with the town council, with you, with other members of your board, or something that's in front of you, maybe even uses embarrassing language, although in this culture today, I'm not sure what that means. Any of that happens, that email is public. It is not private to you and that citizen or the citizens that sent it. It would therefore behoove you, if you're worried about their being embarrassed, that you let them know that what they've sent you already is public, and if they keep on, it will continue to be public, because if somebody requests it, it will be out there. This is most applicable to the council who is in a political arena running for election, and I'm confident, although I've never asked to see them, I could if I wanted, all the emails that come into them during campaign season. You know, maybe a citizen saying, hey, you need to know about your opponent, that they're a rotten so-and-so, and here's why. Or here's what you need to run against, because I know this person is a bad person, and here's why. And they may think that's private, but it's not. And so I give you the similar caution, just so any of your friends and or peers don't make a mistake that embarrasses them and maybe embarrasses you if you respond in the wrong way. Because not only are their emails responses or emails public, so are your responses to those emails, whether or not they're copied to anybody else. Basically, if it touches on town business and it's sent to you, whether at a private email address or a town email address, does not matter. It is a public record which you individually have a duty to preserve. And so, how do you do that? First, my recommendation to all boards is any emails you get from on town business should be forwarded immediately to the town clerk for records keeping purposes. That way, the town clerk, when we get a public records request, can respond in a timely manner and assert any necessary exemptions required to protect the public based on the exemptions that are available. And here's what you should know are the consequences of not following that advice and providing said emails or other public records, i.e. anything sent to you that touches on town business, to the clerk. The consequences are, under state law, you now are the records custodian of that record. What does that mean? That means you are obligated to keep that record for the state mandated period of time, which depends entirely on what kind of record it is. And secondarily, if a records request comes in and the clerk can't comply, she or he would send you the request and say, Mr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so, we got this request for your emails or other records. Since you didn't provide them to me, you need to respond and make sure you saw statutory exemptions applicable. And make sure is important because they're not optional. Because the exemptions are not meant to protect you. They are meant to protect other members of the public. So it's not about your privacy. It's about public privacy. It's about other issues like, for example, crime victims and the addresses of law enforcement and Social Security numbers. And if you're wondering, well, there's probably a manageable number. There are hundreds of exemptions to the public records law. Hundreds. I've been practicing law almost 41 years, and I don't know them all. So what I'm trying to tell you is, unless you want to be the person who tries to figure all that out, which, by God, you know, bless you if you want to do that, turn the records over, all of them, to the town clerk and let him or her do the job of asserting the exemptions on your behalf. Does anybody have any questions about that?
No.
Okay. So that's where we are regarding public records. I think the last thing I want to say about the sunshine part, and again, I recognize this is a refresher for you all, but an important part of your board training, is that this is a scary thing to hear, particularly as a volunteer, particularly for many of you as a retired volunteer who would probably rather do something else than worried about whether you're going to break the law in your golden years. I know I'm in my golden years too, and that's the last thing I want to worry about. But it is important that if you're going to do this service, which with which the town cannot function, that you do not make your service something that you regret. So you just need to follow the law. It is not worth it to take chances on anybody's behalf. The only person you need to worry about protecting in this business is yourself. And that is a place where you're entitled to be selfish. Nobody should get in trouble for anybody else. Anybody have any questions about sunshine or the brief part of public records, which is important that you understand?
No.
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 Is there anything else I can touch on while I'm here and available?
No. No. No.
All right. Well, thank you all for hearing me out, and I apologize again for not being there in person.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Yes, you too, ma'am. Thank you.
Oh, it's me. Okay. We're on to 7B, which is proposed budget items for the fiscal year of 25-26.
All right. So tonight's board meeting begins one of many to open discussion and seek input from this board on budget proposals. The purpose for this discussion is to provide staff feedback on whether to propose these items, not to review any design or cost estimates tonight. Okay. With multiple items for discussion, I'd like to review each one by one and receive the board's consensus, if that's okay.
Okay.
Item number one is Cocoa Bill, the historic marker. The board discussed this and a little bit of the design last month and requested it be brought back before, again, for budget considerations. Staff estimates the cost currently at $3,500, and this item would be brought back to this board for design review. So by consensus, what would this board like to discuss about this item and kind of proceed through that first item?
Does anybody have any thoughts?
No.
No?
It sounds like a good idea to me.
I think so, too. So proceed.
Okay. Sure. Do you want, Ms. Vice Chair, would you like to kind of wrap everything up at the end and ask for consensus item by item? Is that probably a little bit easier, or how would you like to proceed?
Item by item, and
Okay. So then, by consensus, approving to move the marker.
Move forward with item one.
Okay.
And now we'll go on to item two.
Thank you.
Okay.
The pickleball court covers. So staff has researched potential improvements to provide a protective cover over the north pickleball courts at Pollard Park and recommends a design that would eliminate the need to close said courts due to maintenance on the cell tower. Staff estimates that a cost to be approximately $180,000. This item would be brought back to this board for design review.
Now, I have a question. Are they looking for the cell companies to pay that, or is it now back to us?
Yeah, so that's not, there's not been a confirmed negotiation. That is part of it, but that's not something that I can talk about here and that kind of stuff. But this is more so, is this an idea that this board would support if we would have to budget it or not?
Got any thoughts on that?
Are we talking something like a hard roof, hard covering, or
yes?
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be a metal.
That's what I figured. It'd have to be a hard covering if you're going to protect from the tower.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
So is just a portion of the courts going to be covered, not all the courts?
Correct. Yeah, at this stage, that's correct.
And which portion would be covered?
It'd be the north side of the pickleball courts.
And the tennis courts, too, the south side, or no?
At this point, no. We don't have something
for that.
The pickleball,
okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just the north, the first two courts, I guess first, if
yeah,
whatever you're
courts,
considering
yeah.
First, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more protection from anything falling from the tower and so forth.
Currently we just close the courts if the cell tower is under construction or maintenance.
And yeah, sometimes it's hard to keep people off them when they're closed. I mean, if you're not watching.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good idea.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. So we want you to move forward on that.
Thank
on
you.
Item two. And we'll go on to
item number three. Have a few parts to it. So just to kind of recap on this item, it's to discuss new or previously explored items that we've talked about at this board. And it's an opportunity to kind of select key projects and then prioritize them.
Okay.
So that doesn't necessarily mean we have to approve every single idea or research every idea. This is more just to kind of focus our attention on what might be good priorities for next year.
Okay.
So the first one is bringing back the exterior improvements to the Davies Park restroom facilities. So that was discussed a few, I think I want to say 2021, this board discussed that. The current exterior is from a community project almost 20 years ago, and the paint has started to fade and wear due to time. And the previous discussion through this board was centered around either repainting or installing a brick fascia. And these suggestions were made in response to rescinding an original recommendation for a public art competition. I don't know if Mr. Schaefer and Ms. Keys, you remember?
I thought they decided on brick, but no.
So they did, and then it was removed from the budget for other purposes.
Oh,
so
okay.
We kind of repurposed that funding. So that's kind of why we were wanting to bring it back. If you guys even wanted the brick painting, or if you wanted to go in a different direction, a lot of new board members and new council members, that might be a different option. So we just wanted to bring it back to the board to see what your all's thoughts were.
And do you have thoughts?
I'm wondering, would there be an advantage for the facade, the brick facade, over repainting it?
That's a good question. I really don't know the specific differences, especially depending on what kind of fascia we buy. If it's like a salt tolerant, we would always want to make sure, especially being that close to the water, we would make sure that it's a salt tolerant aspect.
It just seems like there'd be a real difference in the cost, because repainting it wouldn't be very expensive.
Certainly.
Building a wall might.
And I also wanted to point out, too, these items that we're going to be talking about, by consensus, the board is able to request staff do more research to bring back at either a February or March board meeting.
You know, I do have concern with the brick facade, because it's one of those things that with salt water, if it's not put on right, and, you know, that could deteriorate a lot more than painting would deteriorate. Are we talking like a just regular coat of paint, or are we talking a kind of a repairing the artwork that's on there? How does everybody feel about that, the artwork itself?
I thought about that, too. I mean, we could do that, too, just go over it like they did with the signs, just recently at Ponce Preserve. Mm-hmm. And they look nice.
They look great.
Yeah, they do. We could do that. It's funny because I'm trying to remember if I guess the brick sounded good, but the painting also sounds nice. When you go in other communities and see that they have things like that, it just makes it more local, more...
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think we should table this to the next meeting when we have
everybody? I think it would be a good idea so we get more opinions on that.
Sure. So by consensus, would you like staff to research this to bring back at a February or March budget consideration?
Yes, that would be lovely.
Great. Moving right along. I like this.
All right.
So the second one would be the kayak staging area at the boat ramp. That was previously discussed from the board, and the decision was for staff to consider a kayak staging area, not a kayak launch. We did budget a little bit for a kayak staging area. However, that was also reappropriated for a lot of this happened with the hurricanes and
right.
different appropriation for a budget. So that's up for discussion as well. If you would like to reconsider a staging area. I know that this may come before at a different board meeting of a different style or a different idea of a kayak staging area, but this is up for discussion if you would like staff to research that for budget considerations.
Thoughts?
I know there was a lot of discussion at one of the meetings about that. Some of the concerns was because of the being busy there because of the boat launches and so forth, interfering with the kayak launches, and you know we don't want to get to the point where we get too busy and have injuries and so forth. It'd be nice to have a kayak launching area, but I don't know if anybody's ever been kayaking on a river. You have to watch it because when the tide's going out, if you get caught in that, you struggle to get back.
Right, in that area where it's been a while. Where we used to launch on the east side of the ramp now has more junk on it, concrete and what. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't like that before, but it would be nice to have a separate area to put the. But then we were talking about, I think at the meeting, the cost of a launch and.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you want to research that,
uh-huh. like a staging area again.
Yeah, or if they could. I mean, if it's a good idea to remove all that trash and concrete and let them go in there on the side like we used to back in the day.
So then, if I'm hearing correctly, by consensus, would the board like for staff to research kayak staging versus removing the riprap for a kayak launch?
Well, I have a question, too, about, you know, the difference between the launch and the staging area. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about giving them a staging area, but then where will they launch it? Will they launch it on the boat ramp?
So just to fill you in just a little bit, the kayak launch versus staging, this was brought by a resident of concern because there wasn't a lot of great traffic flow and people were using, kind of getting into the way of boaters wanting to use their paddleboards. So the staging area was thought to be within the roundabout where you turn around in the boat ramp and have a little area where you could set up your paddleboard. A lot of times the issue too was blowing up a paddleboard within everybody's way. Mm-hmm. So the staging area would serve as that purpose of kind of like, okay, off to the side, set up your stuff, and then yield and wait your turn to then go in and launch through the boat ramp.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, could we do research both just to see if it's a good idea or not to...
We can certainly see how much is possible to research between now and March, for sure.
Yeah, because...
They'd find out a cost on it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't need to spend the money on a launch. It was nice before. It was just a slope, and you kind of pulled your kayak in and went on your way, but there's just too much stuff there now. I just worry, you know, when it's busy on the weekends, especially in the summer, even the boaters are supposed to stage somewhere else, and they don't. They go and they're right there, and I just want to alleviate any fights between the kayakers and the boaters.
No, when I launch my kayak, I normally go up here to the Wilbur what do you call it, that small park?
Yeah, Wilbur Wetlands.
Yeah. And just go in there because it's nice because the water is a lot calmer.
Yeah.
You don't have to actually get out into the river. But, yeah, we can find out an expense in that as far as how much it would cost to make it feasible for a launch down there. But my main concern is the traffic.
Yeah. And not an expensive launch, though. I was thinking just an area out of that way, you know.
Like a natural,
just like it used to be. But I don't know, you know, maybe the riprap is serving a purpose, so with all the flooding and everything. So if you could research both, and that would be great.
Sure. Is that by consensus?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, the next one would be additional elements in decorating for the holiday season. So previously the board recommended to continue decorating Pollard Park using in-house staff for the holiday season and to increase the budget for the tree lighting ceremony. We were able to do that, and we've had a really great success in doing so. However, we recently found out with the second hurricane that has hit and affected the tree lighting ceremony, especially because hurricanes have been coming a little bit later in the year, it's been a really big effect on the tree lighting ceremony. So due to that, staff recommends the town consider an artificial tree for this event moving forward, and staff requests discussion from the board on potential improvements to this event, not just for an artificial tree, but potentially hiring a company to decorate the whole town or just Pollard Park, whatever the board by consensus would like us to research. Even if you have other ideas that you'd like to see as part of our tree lighting ceremony, it's become a big event, and a lot of the community loves having it at Pollard Park. We're just trying to see what else we can do and how we can grow but sustain in that park the tree lighting ceremony.
Is it a big burden to the guys from the town?
No, it's not a burden. It is a lot of hours,
right.
And it just depends on where we kind of mitigate those hours too. And that's why we wanted to see if the board would like us to research what the difference in time versus paying a decorator would be. It takes them several weeks to decorate the whole town.
They do such a nice job.
They do.
It doesn't hurt to do the research.
No, it doesn't hurt to do the research.
That's the consensus.
Okay. Additionally, it's not on my report, but as of today, a resident did submit a request to potentially install a fence at Pollard Park along the bigger playground. I don't know if you all are familiar with the playground that is closest to the fire station. The resident has requested us research and potentially talk about a fence around that playground. Not enclosing the playground. I don't think I'd have to research if we would be able to do that, but putting a fence along the side where the road would be to kind of help keep...
Besides the one that's already there, the white fence that's...
Yes, so south... Is that south? South of the bathrooms. Not the one behind the bathrooms.
Where they have it open and the
it's
trucks
open,
drive
yeah.
through. Oh. It's funny because my husband and I were talking about that.
Yeah.
And because I remember when we put the playground in, I was insistent on having a fence because my child was small and going there. And I don't know if it used to go the whole way and they took it out when we got the cell tower and everything. I can't remember.
I'm not sure. It predates me and I haven't seen pictures recently.
I can't remember, but that was the whole purpose of that white picket fence. So, yeah. I think
it's worth looking into for sure.
Because as we've heard, I mean, there's been a few of the autistic children that have ran off and that quick drowned. And I think in Peninsula can be a busy road.
Yeah,
anything they just are impulsive. So anything to keep them away from the road, I think, is a good idea.
Yeah. The speed limit is 30 miles an hour up there, and it's, you know, would be a good idea to keep them away from, you know, that way we'll keep them away from the road. So.
Because even the best parent, I mean, something can, you can get distracted, and in that quick.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
So I'm all for it.
Yeah. Now, I have, do have something, too, also, is we do have the Sunset Park down there. I don't think we have any signage down there indicating it's a park. Also, the Wilbur Wetland Park, I don't think we have any signage up there, do we?
Yes.
Do we have one up there?
Yes, it's recreation area, but it's not spelled out.
It doesn't say it's a, yeah.
Because we only own 30% of that.
Right.
Oh, microphone.